ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Australia 2-0 up after just 6 days of cricket. My name's Corbin Middlemass. My podcast co-host is Ed Cowan. He is still in the Sunshine State, but it's just relocated a little further south. Hello, Teddy.
Corb. Good evening. I've got a big smile on my face. Australia 2, England 0.
Wow. So 2-0, Pat Cummins and Josh Hazlewood haven't played a game. Australia have got a team which features Josh Inglis, Michael Nisa and Brendan Doggett. Not to say that those guys aren't test players or anything like that, but they certainly weren't part of the plan for the first two test matches of the series. And yet Australia leads anyway. England on the wrong side of history. There's so much. I feel like I've got 2 days to cover with you, given the fact that we didn't speak yesterday. But, day four alone, it felt like England showed a little bit of fight, at least for one partnership. And yet, for whatever that's worth, it was over just after the tea break early in the final session.
Yeah, you and Copes did an excellent job last night. That was me by the pool with the family this morning. So I felt well across the issues. Yeah, look, I think the fact that Australia, if you're being brutally honest, this is their 1.5s. The team that they went in their mind 2 months in advance, how are we going to beat them? Cummins, Hazlewood, Stark. We've got the three greatest modern fast bowlers potentially Australia's ever had. We've got Australia's greatest ever finger spinner. And we've got the modern Bradman. You know, you take your pick. There are a few moving pieces in there. Against a team that had planned 2 years out, maybe 3 years out for this series, and the hubris, verging on arrogance at times as to how they were going to go about it. I'm not too tempted to pick apart the test match in its whole, because we obviously have a podcast tomorrow that's going to drop where we will go deep, layers and layers and layers, and unravel this absolute shambles of an Ashes tour that England have put apart. So maybe tonight we can enjoy the Australian win and touch on the players that have come together to perform the way they have.
It's so hard, isn't it, not to sort of lean into what it means for the Bazballers. And we spoke obviously a lot about it last night with Copes, and it feels like you're constantly drawn there as to what this means for the Bazball project, and this is meant to be the centrepiece, and as you touched on, the multiple years in the making, and yet for Australia, it's an all too familiar position that they're playing from in front in a home Ashes series against an opponent which promised a lot and so far have under-delivered. So from an Australian point of view, Michael Nisa obviously picks up a fifer, and he's returned to Test cricket. It's been 3 years since we last saw him at this level. And we spoke a little bit about it pre-game, where he'd had two already and started the collapse last night when England lost 5 for 44 before stumps. And it felt like going into the day that, look, if this is it for Michael Nisa, and there's a chance that it could be given the fact that Cummins and Lyon are returning, what a great moment for him that he gets the chance to return to Test cricket and pick up some big wickets at his home test or in a home test. And then he did more than that. He ends up finishing with Pfeiffer, and it's a really good Pfeiffer too on his return. And who knows when the run will end. It might last just the one test match. It might go a little longer than that, but it's a moment they won't be able to take off him.
Yeah, the pink ball specialist. He just gets subbed in for the swinging pink ball. One thing we know about Michael Nisa is he will never let you down. And we say this consistently on this podcast. You know what you're going to get. Someone who tries absolutely every single moment they're on the field. And I don't want to talk about England, but I'm just going to put the mirror up and reflect Nisa's efforts compared to Archer and the body language and the intent and the effort and everything that Michael Nisa presented in this test match is everything that is wrong in the England change room. Because it felt like he was willing to be the guy to execute a very simple plan for the team. And those last three words are the most important bit for the team. It's not pretty at times. There's no ego. The keeper's up for a lot of the middle overs to, ensure that their plans that they've put in place can be executed upon. And he's willing to do it. And he's willing to do it not just this ball, not just next ball, but over after over and build pressure and do what is needed to be done. And that's all you can ask of someone when they come into a team. And someone who probably, you're right, may never play again. So we talked about his selection in the, I guess, with the framing reference of maybe he shouldn't be playing because Nathan Lyon isn't playing and he came in for Lyon. And we actually talked on night one, we don't mind the selection with the pink ball because it swings and Doggett's more of a seamer, really. And he probably suits these conditions more than a Brendan Doggett. And maybe, you know, Nisa gets picked and Lyon stays and Doggett drops out. And that would be harsh after one test. So I just could not be happier for him. He had a great test match. There would have been a lot of thoughts of doubt going through his mind coming into the test with no Nathan Lyon and the conversation that naturally happens during these test matches when that happens. And he went and did what he always does, which is give his best and get an outcome.
Absolutely. It was a fine performance, and he started the rot last night when he was able to get that wicket of Ollie Pope, and then did the same today. It was the partnership breaker. It took a superb catch from Steve Smith, and I'll touch on him in just a moment. I'm sure we'll pick this apart a little more as we head to Adelaide, but does it justify the selection? All's well that ends well. They take the 20 wickets. Lyon misses out. Is it as simple as that? That, hey, they got it right because the team ended up winning in emphatic fashion?
Corbett, I don't think that we as people who, you know, you broadcast and commentate, I just give a few hot takes here and there, but we talk about accountability in results, and we talked about it in reference to Usman Khawaja. We talk about it in terms of how teams prepare. You are accountable to the outcomes that you provide. And so with that in mind, you can only say that the selectors did an excellent job. And for all the doubters that suggested for one way or another, and there would have been times in the game when they were scratching their head, the middle overs today, or that the first session today when the ball went soft, in the first innings when Stokes and Root were going, I'm sure they were thinking, geez, it'd be handy to have Nathan Lyon here. But they found a way to counter that, and they came up with plans to affect without him. And so it's hard to sit back and say they got it wrong. They clearly got it right. And part of that is they got it right. And partly it is that England got two bazookas out and shot both of their feet off all the way through. So you can only play against what is presented, and they did. And the selectors, I guess, should be commended for that.
Do you know who I'm going to miss a lot when they finish playing for Australia in Test cricket? Steve Smith. I'm sort of watching him again tonight.
You reckon he can play?
Oh, it's just... And like the catch that he took and how animated he was in the field, and then he hits the winning runs, and you sort of, you end up watching him play, and you think, and I know you sort of raised it, and it has been sort of discussed at times, thinking, you know, is he likely to just pull up stumps one day and decide that's it, and it could be as soon as the end of this series, and you think, gee, we've been so lucky that, yeah, we lived through it. We got to watch Steve Smith, and you already said it once on the pod about, you know, the best since Bradman. And then even tonight, he gets the winning runs, and this guy's achieved everything there is to achieve in the game. And you think, you win another test match, you're in Brisbane, you 2-0 up in the series, and it feels like it means as much to him right now than it did 10, 12 years ago. Like, I admire high achievers so much that still find that drive and the next thing that they want to play for. And I don't know, it feels like he's not necessarily the guy that everyone's going to be talking about, you know, at the completion of the Brisbane test or the stumps on day four. And yet, for whatever reason, he was the one whom I was sort of drawn to at the finish.
Well, there's a world where he doesn't take that catch. Well, there's a world where someone else is fielding there next year and it's not taken, and England get 150 ahead, and all of a sudden there's a tricky chase, and maybe there's a little skid mark somewhere along the way. So the fact that he can produce that after 3.5 days cricket, a moment of brilliance, and at some, again, not to hold the mirror up and create the reflection here, but it's the exact opposite of what we saw from an England team who consistently dropped catches, who moped around in the field, didn't capture those moments. Australia fielded the house down. Think of all the catches they took, the run out that changed the game. This is a team that, if you look around the team, you don't think, oh, that's a white-hot fielding team. And yet, they probably produced one of their best fielding performances of recent years.
Yep, absolutely. And it's a team with two wicket keepers and four fast bowlers and all the rest of it. And yet they were much, the much better fielding team, you're right, than in this test match. The Ben Stokes rally today. So, I mean, they were able to bat out a session. We hadn't seen any side do that throughout the test match so far. And it sort of all of a sudden had, the most optimistic English fans talking about Headingley in 81 and, can Stokes play the role of both of them and what has this all become and everything else. And, ultimately he was devastated when he got out and, a lion-hearted competitor. But you sort of look through, and we'll talk more about England tomorrow, but you look through the three phases of the game, you just praise the Aussies for their fielding, the bowling and the batting, that's it. And it's hard to think, what's the redeeming qualities out of the game for England? What kind of area did they particularly get something out of?
They got nothing out of the game. They got absolutely steamrolled. The only thing, and given the let's call it arrogance for the moment to which they play or have continued to play the game, the one glimmer of hope came from someone with some courage, and we know he's got plenty in Ben Stokes, playing the anti-Bazball, batting normally, playing shots on their merits, not predetermining, not trying to push the game along too quickly. And so for all the huff and bluff and bluster, in actual fact, what dragged them back into the game was some old-fashioned grind. And their team is, a team is only as strong as the characters within it. And that England team showed in this test match that they have probably two and a half strong characters. And he is probably one and a half of them. There's a world where he continues to play test cricket under a different coach and probably the team flourishes more. But again, we'll pick that apart tomorrow.
Yeah.
But if there's anything to come of it, it was that moment of just some old-fashioned graft. And they did it the old-fashioned way.
And Joe Root gets the monkey off his back with a 100 in Australia against his chief rival. And yet there's another number which is hitting you in the face that he's now played 16 test matches here and he's never been in the winning locker room. But as you said, we'll talk more about that tomorrow.
I will touch on that because I know and Boof is part of the commentary team and one of the great eyes for cricketers that we've seen. And he always says he can't be a proper great until he gets 100 here. Well, I'd actually go one step further and say without a match winning 100, not 100 in a game you get steamrolled, they're meaningless. That is a meaningless innings. May as well have been zero. And so I don't think he can be a proper great without a match winning 100 in Australia.
In a live test?
Not in a live test. I think it's a...
Okay, in any test.
In any test. Every test match counts.
Okay. Mitchell Starc, we spoke to him post-play and he was his usual sort of self-deprecating self and trying to deflect and put the attention in other areas and talk about other guys. But this feels like a Mitchell Johnson type series, doesn't it? From 2013-14, he's the man of the match in two straight games, 18 wickets. He also top scores with the bat in this test match in which the team makes 511. He had a cheeky line in all of that saying, I think we actually showed the batters how to do it in the way that we went about it with the stick. And that's hard to argue. And
true.
even though he missed out with the new ball on the night of day three, he then comes back with a vengeance and gets himself involved again. He's we've said it so many times, but he's playing the cricket of his career at 35.
Yeah, it's actually interesting because the innings, it almost felt like, that old statesman's mature fellas. Let's just pull our heads in for a second. This is how you do it.
Yeah.
If you just don't get out for a bit, batting becomes a lot easier. So let's just not get out and follow my lead. I know I'm batting at number 9 or whatever he walked at number 8. Just don't get out. And so he actually, again, like he has with the ball, he's like, just follow my lead. I might not be the most vocal human, but I lead with my actions and just come with me for a bit. And he did it with the bat, did it with the ball, of course, in the first innings. That feels an eternity ago. But even in this second innings, yes, he didn't, maybe not with the new ball, but those two wickets that he took last night were of the utmost importance. And so it showed the resilience of the character as opposed to a bad first. Did anyone else bowl a bad first spell and not be able to come back in this test match? Oh, I could name a few. He actually could have the resilience and character to say, okay, that wasn't great, overpitched, I'm going back to plan A and I have the skills to execute it. And he did that. He did his job for the team. And even today, when it wasn't really working from a wickets point of view, they all contributed to what turned out to be an excellent bowling performance, I thought, in the second innings.
No doubt. No doubt. So Australia 2-0 up, a pair of 8-wicket wins. So same victory margin in the two test matches that have been completed so far. And Mitchell Starc, man of the match in both. Just a little fun exercise, given we had the debate in Perth about who should have got the man of the match. And I gave you an insight that we do get the votes on ABC Sport. We're one of the media outlets that gets to do the 3-2-1. Fill in the rest of it for me then. Who gets the two? Who gets the one?
Oh, wow. You've caught me well off guard here. Two.
Well, do you want me to tell you what we did, and you can tell me if you disagree?
Okay, yeah, sure.
So we gave two to Michael Nisa.
Yep.
And then we had a toss-up for the one, and we decided to give it to Alex Carey for his half century and his exceptional wicket keeping, which I know you're a big fan of.
I would have given Carey two.
Wow.
And I mean Nisa, yes, five for 40 off 16, but the game essentially was won. I think Carey's rear guard innings when the game was, you know, at that point in the balance, just lost two quick wickets and a keeping performance, not just the actual glove work, but the ability to come up to the stumps to break the tactics of England. So it's one thing doing it to look good. The other is I'm doing it again because it's best for the team. I'm sure he doesn't enjoy keeping up to Scott Boland. Oh, it's a great challenge, and sure, he thrives in that sense. But he's doing it to keep them in their crease clearly so that he can hit a length, so that all dismissals come into play. He's doing it for the team. He's not doing it for his own accolades. And so I'd probably give, you know, I'm the captain of the Carey fan club. So I'm giving him two, and Michael Nisa can take one.
And Jake Weatherald, by the way, he was in the conversation, bit of red ink and 72 in the first dig, but there was a lot of candidates, and that's the direction we went. I'm sure we'll talk more about the team going forward, but just a little one on the way out. Is there a chance Australia makes three changes from a side that's 2-0 up in the Ashes leading towards the Adelaide Test?
Well, I can definitely see two, Lyon and Cummins. Who's the third?
Well, if they bring back their veteran opener,
oh, give
and
it a,
head goes absolutely. Into the middle order. Oh,
give it a rest, mate. You put a great tweet up during the day. So So Weatherald and Head have the third and fourth highest opening partnerships Australia have had in the last 2 years, and they've only opened twice together.
Yep.
Come on. So if you're, it's a no-brainer. If it was, what's the half step before no-brainer, which was this test match? What is it now?
I feel like I'm trying to predict what I think they're going to do rather than what I would do in all of it. And one of them, by the way, was Sam Constance when he went berserk at Boxing Day. So that's I think that's either one or two on the list. So, which, you know, Aussie batted well and everyone batted well around Sam that day. But Sam did the lion's share of that partnership before eventually he was out. So,
you know, sometimes in sport, Corb, and I've had this feeling, you get dropped at the station as a player and the train keeps moving and you look up 10 seconds later and the train's out of sight. Usman's standing at the moment with his suitcase on the station, kind of wondering where the train is. The train's miles down the tracks, mate. That would be huge retreat, because maybe that was their plan, but everything has changed. The complexion of the team, the series, the momentum, it shouldn't even be in the conversation. It will be in the conversation.
Yeah, it will be. Yeah.
Of course it will be.
When you're in such a dominant position, it's an interesting call as to what they do here at the selectors at this particular juncture, because, like you said, it feels like they've got all the momentum.
So two questions for you.
Yep.
If you're Usman Khawaja,
yes,
what would you do?
Get as fit as I can and make myself available for selection. I mean, if it's an Ashes series, he wants to play. And make the selectors leave him out. That's their job. It's not Usman's job to pick the team. He doesn't need to do his mates a favour and stand down. If it's, you know, it's up to Bailey, Dottamate and McDonald to make the call. And you know, I understand why guys want to play as long as they can and get every single last bit out of their careers and wring the towel dry. So I don't think it's on him that he has to make it easy for him and retire or anything like that. It's it's up to the selectors to decide to leave him out. Mm. That's their gig.
And if you were Ben Stokes handing over the team list in Adelaide and you have a look at the top, what would he prefer?
You'd definitely prefer to see Usman back in the team up the top and ahead in the middle order. Mm. I think that's if Australia lose one quickly and they're one down and it doesn't go their way, it's another flashpoint in the series. So a lot to ponder for the selectors, which sort of, as you said, feels like a pretty straightforward decision, and yet these particular moments in the past have sort of caused a bit of confusion. Boys are off to Noosa, so England's heading up there to try and get a bit of R&R and regroup.
Not.
They definitely are. They are. They're going to Noosa.
Honestly. Yeah. See the notes that I have written down for tomorrow's podcast? They're actually making it too easy for us. They are making it way too easy for us.
A lot to ponder. Teddy, the Aussies 2-0 up. And as we touched on earlier, just one side in the history of Test cricket have come from 2-0 down to win a series, not just an Ashes series, not a series in Australia, any series in 150 years of Test cricket. And that was a side featuring Don Bradman. So after 6 days, feels like the Ashes might just about be done. Appreciate your time through the vicious thunderstorm, which we've heard sort of cracking away in the background. Have you got anything for me before we depart and we chat again after sort of one sleep early tomorrow morning?
So what was the overs-unders for days played in the series again? Do you have that in your notes?
I don't have that book in front of me, but I'll have it by tomorrow.
Come up tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yep. I think we're unders.
The unders is looking good. Yeah, friend of the underbetter. I know, and you're not a betting man, but yeah, it's... I know Darren Lehman used to always walk around and say, oh, the Ashes is, it's a so-called 25 days, but it's always decided after 11 or 12. Well, that's feels like it's even shorter than that this time around. Hey, Teddy, thanks for taking some time out of your night on the Gold Coast. Safe travels, and I'll see you in the morning.
Can't wait, Corb.
Don't forget, check out the ABC website, abc.net.au/sport. All your latest Ashes information there as well. Check out the live blog and analysis. And don't forget, you can catch us here on the ABC Cricket Podcast every Monday and Friday and after every day's play.
Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.